Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is The Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It remains one of the marvels of public transportation for the nation, but Metro has had its problems and challenges over the past several years. And tonight, we're sitting down with a man at the top to talk about the budget, public safety, and much more. General Manager Randy Clark joins me in studio to answer our questions and yours. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Mr. Clark, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Harold, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Let me get right into some of the public safety issues that seem to be really at top of mind for everyone. There is something that you've developed called nighttime courtesy stop, something that's going to be happening in the overnight hours starting this summer. What is that?
Yeah, well, thanks. So listen, safety is a core value for us at Metro. So we're trying to think through every single idea to make sure not only our employees are safe out there every day, but our customers are safe. So on the bus side, one of the things that a couple agencies have done, and so we really are trying to mirror that here and bring some innovation, is the idea after 9 p.m. through 5 a.m., so you know when it's dark out at night, for instance, and this wouldn't be necessarily like around Metro Center, kind of like where you're in the core and there's a stop really close to each other and there's great sidewalks and lighting. But some places the sidewalks are not as great or the lighting isn't as great. And so, you know, there might be someone that lives in an apartment building, and instead of going two blocks up at 10:30 at night, say a woman with a child or something, and says, "Hey, operator, if there's a safe spot here, do you mind letting me off?" And that operator they'll deem if it's safe and then let that person off. So trying to just be really help that customer get closer to home or their destination and making sure that it's as safe as possible. So that's really the whole premise here. We're rolled out as of last night. A lot of people have been really reacting to that in a very positive way. But again, really trying to, how do we make it so every experience is really safe? And sometimes the walk or roll to the stop is actually the more unsafe situation, because on the bus itself, you know, you got a professional operator getting you around. Sometimes, though, getting to the stop could be a little hazardous, so we want to help with that.
What was the genesis of that idea? I can imagine, obviously, overnight, you may not have as many riders as you do mm-hmm. during the day, but where did that come from, and how do you think that might impact the overnight routes?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, so again, it's about darkness, right? So at 3 p.m, generally not a problem. We're trying to get a little more where people just feel safer out on the system. And the more safe people feel, the more they're going to use the system. And then the overall situation is better. So, we are actually working towards a 24-hour bus system in D.C. as well. I appreciate the council leading on working to fund that in the recent budget. So we're aiming for the December, early January timeframe, working through an MOU, memorandum of understanding, with the district, so we can run all of our high-frequency buses overnight, so we won't have a gap in service. You know, sometimes now between 2:30, 3 a.m. and kind of 4:35, depending on when routes start, we actually have a gap. So that's going to actually further help create great bus service throughout the system, and this initiative will help during that period as well.
The information that has recently come to light about the death at the Rhode Island Avenue station last Tuesday, it's been revealed that this was a subway surfing incident, this TikTok challenge, obviously not an issue just for Metro. It's been problematic in New York and other places. Your reaction to that? My first thought is, who does that?
Yeah, well, first thing, right, it's very tragic. Anytime there's, in society, a loss of life, especially a younger person, is just really tragic, right? So, you know, our thoughts are obviously with the family and friends of that person. It's just a sad situation. This is not really a thing that happens here too much. New York has obviously had gone through a little bit more of that historically. We run at very high speeds, also an underground system that you really can't do it, so it's more on the kind of the parts outside of the tunnel where it tends to happen a little bit. Listen, our message is simple. Don't leave the train and don't get on the tracks. There's some video out there we put out yesterday showing people trespassing. We're doing that in the spirit of trying to get people not to do that. Education. You know, we have 750 volts electricity. You touch that, you are not going to survive. You know, trains don't stop on a dime. That you are entering where the train is, so you know you're putting your life at risk. So we're trying to do everything we can. We have new 988 signs around, so people that are feeling mental illness or you know issues, we want to get people help. We've actually hired some crisis intervention specialists at Metro, and we're hiring six more. So basically, trained basically social workers out in the system, trying to help people that need assistance or trying to connect them with services. We have an extensive video system that we're monitoring in real time. Our station staff as well, transit police, and all of our partners. So we are doing everything we can to keep people off the system, on the system, but off the right of way, and make sure they stay in trains. And we ask people, if you see any of that type of behavior, immediately, you know, call transit police or just call 911, and so we can kind of safely get someone removed from that system.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to Randy Clark, the general manager for Metro. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Suzanne, calling from D.C. Suzanne, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Suzanne, are you there? Suzanne, give us a call back if you can. About the issue regarding the subway surfers and also the people who are trespassing on the tracks. I know you said that you have kind of this eye in the sky kind of electronic monitoring, but any ideas as to how that kind of thing may be prevented? I would imagine that particularly when it comes to people who are trans, who are on the tracks, trespassing on the tracks, that it's not just dangerous for the people who are trespassing on the tracks, but any Metro employee or Metro police officer trying to get them off.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Harold. Obviously, listen, the number one thing I think about from the second I wake up to the second I go to bed is not obviously the customer safety, but an employee safety. And there's nothing worse than hearing something may have happened to someone that you're ultimately responsible for. So again, if we need people to all act maturely and smartly out there so we don't put others at risk. The ultimate solution to this is what in our industry you would call something like called platform screen doors. So let's say you went to Dulles Airport and you know how they have the people mover?
Yes.
Right? And you know how there's one set of doors that opens and then the second set to the if you will, the tram that goes around from terminal to terminal? That's what you would see at a lot of Asian and a bunch of European transit agencies. So someone literally cannot go past the platform and enter the trackway. That's something we eventually want to get to. Very complex engineering, has to tie in with our signaling system. All the doors have to have the same, where the doors line up for alignment, obviously. But we put that down as a marker. That's what we definitely want to move to as a system. That is world-class transit, is the safest transit in the world. So if you went to Hong Kong and Paris, even old places like London are retrofitting. So that's where we got to get to eventually.
Mm-hmm. I know there's been a lot of movement to add additional police officers and to make the trains safer. How is that working when you have the other officers from different jurisdictions to supplement the Metro Police?
Yeah, so when I got here last summer, one of the things I really focused on with our police chief was how do we get more uniformed officers out on the street? So we had some people doing some paperwork and things like that. So we brought in some administrative staff, more officers out on the street, got them off construction details. So with our partners with MPD, and I really thank the mayor, she really stepped up and helped us with MPD on joint patrols, but we have some other partnerships around the region as well, and they've all stepped up. We're up over 100%. I think it's 110% patrols now, patrol hours, compared to this time last year. With that, we obviously have more arrests. So crime, I was talking to the chief yesterday. It looks like last month was down. This month's trending down as well. The one anomaly on this is car vehicle theft, which our region is just has a crisis of car vehicle theft going on. This Kia, you know, challenge kind of thing that's going on with that is overwhelmingly, you know, our park and rides. But other stuff is starting to go down because we just have more uniform officers out there. They're making a lot of good arrests, too. So, you know, the people that we're trying to get off the system are people that are committing violent acts. So, you know, people with weapons, assaulting people, things of that nature. We're doing a lot more fare enforcement. You know, again, we're not trying to criminalize fare enforcement. We just want to make it so someone that could be doing violent activity on the system is being checked if they have outstanding warrants and get them off the system. So, you know, safety is what we're into all day, every day. The other thing about a transit system is like a park. So a busy park is a safe park. And when you're only a couple people on a rail car, it kind of seems weird, right? If you get a busy train, naturally, it's just safer. We're all safer kind of as a community system. So ridership is really rebounding pretty significantly. And that alone makes the system, you know, it's a little more hustle bustle. And therefore, the system becomes safer overall.
You mentioned, you know, the fare jumping. There have been, you know, reports for, you know, several years about the financial impact on the system. And I know that there are some turnstiles or entryways that Metro was trying to upgrade. When do you suspect that all of those systems will be in place, and what impact do you believe that's going to? Do you think it's going to work?
Yeah. So listen, we're never going to have zero fare evasion. That'd be called building a wall, right? And we're a public system. We want people into the system. So we want to get down to, quote unquote, what a reasonable amount of fare evasion would be. And, you know, I'm going to have someone on Twitter say, there's no such thing as reason. There is, obviously, because otherwise it's just a wall. So if someone, you know, wants to qualify for the Olympics and jump a 12-foot gate, they're going to do that. So what we have done at Fort Totten is replace the gates that were these kind of shorter paddles with more of what we call a saloon gate. What we learned from the Fort Totten pilot is the hinges need to be much stronger, and they need the gates itself, like the gate needs to be a little bit taller. So that is now what we're moving forward with. We're going to start 3 more stations in the month of July. We have first 10 primary stations, but then we're going to roll it out to the whole system. So that activity should ramp up about mid-July. We're just, you know, kind of supply chain, getting the parts and pieces, making sure it's going to right. So that's definitely going to knock fare evasion down. Fare evasion is both a financial issue and a public safety issue. So law and order, you know, from a just a managing the system, we're looking again at orderliness. I am not advocating to criminalize fare evasion. That was a big debate back in years ago. I don't want to, you know, we're not looking to someone to avoid $2 fare and ruin their life with a criminal record. All we really do is we're looking for people to respect the community system. At the end of the day, it's a community system. The more people respect the community system, the better place it runs. Respect the employees that work there, respect their fellow customers and riders that use it. And we want to make sure we can get people that are violent or doing, you know, very serious crimes off of the system to make it safe for everyone. That's kind of where we're after.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to Metro General Manager Randy Clark. Let's go to Suzanne calling from D.C. Suzanne, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I was wondering when the Purple Line is going to be finished and what kind of challenges are you facing? It's taking a very long time. I'm just wondering what's going on. Thank you.
Yeah, hi, Suzanne. Thanks for the question. So the Purple Line is actually being built by the Maryland Transit Authority, which is not WMATA. So I'm not trying to deflect, but that is not our project. We are coordinating with them. They are doing blasting up in Bethesda right now because there's a lot of interaction between at Bethesda, Silver Spring, College Park, and at New Carrollton. I don't have the specific dates on that. I'm sure if you went and I think they have a Twitter handle on the website on the Purple Line. But I know that the project is back activated and it's working hard to get that done. And we're helping facilitate that best we can. But that's actually a Maryland Transit Administration project.
Thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Bryn calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Bryn. What's on your mind?
Hi, I was curious to know if the crisis counselors that you all are hiring have given you any pointers about what bystanders should do outside of calling 911 in the event that they encounter people who might be in a crisis, who are like on the tracks or who appear to be headed onto the tracks or things like that. Because naturally, you know, they're there in the moment and, you know, like timing is everything. So have they given you any pointers about what people can do in those crucial moments?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah, thanks, Brent. Appreciate the question. So two things. One, again, we have these 988 signs at the back of at every portal now and trying to get people aware. If you have difficulty, please call that number. It's a national number for people that might be experiencing you know, some mental crises. Also, we have a big campaign we're just starting to roll out, which is a lot more of immediate ways to contact transit police. So you'll see the more stickers, more signs on our trains, our buses, at our stations. I would recommend that as the number one thing right away is to, you know, call 911, get a hold of transit police. We have a great app, a CSAY app that you can download and anonymously take pictures and put information as well, or any Metro station employee. And then we're also going to be looking at ways that kind of customers can get, you know, I would say better information to identify potential risks like that to communicate. So thanks for your question and you know, quite frankly, caring about other people out there.
Bryn, thank you so much. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Zabrina calling from Prince George's County. Zabrina, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon. I was calling to ask if there are any efforts to improve the public transportation in Prince George's County. It's just not attractive. Sometimes it can take you an hour and a half or 2 hours to get, you know, 30-mile distance. And so are there any efforts? And then a lot of the transportation only takes you into D.C., but there's no connection within Prince George's County. Thank you.
Yeah. Hi, Sabrina. Great question. So obviously on the rail line side, we are a lot of frequency. So on the Orange Line, we just increased to 10-minute frequency today. And in the budget, we want to get down to 7.5-minute frequency, which would be the most trains ever in the history of the Orange Line. Obviously, then we've got the Blue Line and the Silver Line actually connects to Largo as well. So there's a lot of rail service. On the Green Line down to Branch Ave, that'll be the most rail service we've ever run to Branch Ave. We've doubled the amount of trains down there. I highly recommend you take a look into what's called Metro's Better Bus Initiative. We are redesigning our whole bus network. And in Prince George's, there's a ton of places where we want to actually enhance how the bus system works and gets delivered, connecting to more points and more areas of opportunity. So please look into that.
Sabrina, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're going to take a break, but this conversation with Metro General Manager Randy Clark will continue in just a bit. On Sirius XM Channel 141, I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back with this conversation in just a few seconds. Audrey calling from D.C. Kim from Maryland, you're next. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're sitting down with Metro General Manager Randy Clark, answering questions about the system's transportation from subway to bus to public safety and, of course, the budget, which we will be talking about in just a bit. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. I do want to talk about, of course, this budget crisis, because that's the only thing you can really call it. Anyone who's been around D.C. for a long time, such as myself, money problems for Metro are not new. But $750 million, that's a lot of money. From your perspective, why are we in this position, and how... And what's the answer? What's the secret sauce to getting out of this?
Yeah, obviously, we could spend multiple hours on this topic, but the short and skinny of this, Metro was not really set up correctly from a proper financial investment process. There's a report from 1976. I have it on my desk that someone gave me when I got this job from the Ford Foundation that said, literally said, Metro's funding is not sustainable and we need to figure this out or we're going to have a crisis. That was like just before the system rail system opened. So everyone's kind of known this has been a problem. It's relied very much on fare revenue for a long, long, long time. Slowly but surely, that model was breaking. COVID really accelerated that with our big ridership drop. The other thing is we've had historic inflation the last couple of years, so that has really impacted the system. So this was going to be a structural issue that was going to happen in 28, 29, 30, something like that. And COVID and inflation just really, accordion and just crushed the thing in and made it happen right away. We don't have a dedicated revenue source. So we're like one of the only transit agencies in the country that doesn't have a dedicated operating source. So we now have some dedicated capital that people in the region work really hard to make happen in 2018. That's going to run out by 2029, 2030 as well. So we need to fundamentally structure this in a way that we have a predictable, stable funding source and we don't have this conversation and don't do band-aids and just keep, recycling this topic. If we do that correctly, we have better planning, better financial management, and then the whole system runs a lot better long-term as well.
What do you believe that dedicated funding source should look like?
Well, at this point, I don't think Metro's the one that right now should be determining those solutions. What we're trying to do right now, and so it's a year away from our FY25 financial crisis, we're trying to just get all the facts on the ground so everyone has the same information, be very transparent. The way our model is structured, it's like no other transit authority, quite frankly, in the world. We are at kind of this joint power between Virginia, Maryland, D.C., and the federal government. No other place operates that way, and we're funded. I've heard people call it Frankenstein, right? And it's funded in this weird way where each jurisdiction figures out whatever way they want to create revenue that goes into to pay Metro to run the service. We only run revenue based on fare revenue and advertising, things of that nature. So we can either continue to fund it that way, or a lot of people, not Randy's idea, but other people have called long-term for, a regional sales tax or some other dedicated funding source that goes to Metro. And that also gives the jurisdictions and the states a little bit more financial stability and planning as well, because then they have the certainty of not having to put money into Metro. So, there's pros and cons to all of these things. Each transit agency around the country has done a little differently. If you went to a place like LA Metro runs on a sales tax, and therefore they're responsible for their own operations and maintenance and capital. Other places is a little different or a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I really care about it, that it's predictable and sustainable and we don't go through these cycles. And to do that, we it's ultimately about the customers, right? If we provide an amazing public service, if you care about sustainability, if you care about economic development, if you care about equity, if you care about traffic congestion, if you care about workforce development, no matter what you care about, Metro is a key component. And the reason, Harold, I'm kind of really bullish that this is going to get resolved, I've yet to meet anyone in this region that hasn't said Metro, like this region can be successful without Metro. And all the elected officials have said the same thing. We need Metro to work for this region to grow and be prosperous long term. So we'll get there, but we want to get this out early and really start the conversations.
Are you concerned that each jurisdiction may say to you, hey, Randy, we just don't have it, and that D.C. obviously is dealing with its own budget issues, and I'm sure that the new governor in Maryland, new governor in Virginia, when the Randy Clarks come and say, look, we need to take care of it until a solution is developed, they may say we just don't have it.
Sure. Listen, at the end of the day, though, it's a WMATA by ourselves situation with a handout. At the end of the day, it is a regional system. Lots of people for almost 50 years have put in a lot, billions, ultimately 100 billion plus dollars into this regional asset. I don't believe anyone's going to let that asset just fall apart. We just opened a Silver Line extension to Ashburn to Dulles Airport, right? We just opened Potomac Yard Station a few weeks ago. That was a 40-year dream to put that station together. So, I don't buy here on Howard that we are just not going to run trains to Howard University. We're not going to run trains to National or Dulles Airport. We're not going to serve the Pentagon, which is like a national security issue if we don't do that. We're not going to serve, GW Hospital, one of the biggest hospital complexes in the region. These things are just too important. They can't exist without a functioning Metro. So, at the end of the day, we're going to have to figure it out. Metro's part, we got to run this place really well. We got to run good service, safe, frequent, reliable service, and we got to manage every dollar like it's our personal dollar. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to take the 750 number, that's a projected deficit next year, and reduce that a bit. where every day we're trying to manage every single dollar, whether we can get rid of some vacancies, you know, better management of this, that, and the other. But ultimately, we are going to have a deficit scenario. And it's not just about next year. 750 is next year. We need a source that grows with the problem, because it's not like next year inflation stops. The year after that, there's inflation, inflation, inflation. So we need a source that everyone agrees on that we can run, you know, not have this conversation year after year.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, though. I mean, this $750 million, you know, projection, that's operations, is it not?
Yeah, that's just operations.
Yeah, and but you were talking about the extensions. That's capital.
Yep.
Is this a never the twain shall meet, or are they affected?
They're 100% together, right? And the problem is they are decoupled right now. So they're two buckets of money, right? And to the average person listening, I could see why they're like shaking their head going, what are you talking about? Because it's hard for the average person to say, why do you have two different buckets of money? Well, there's rules behind the different money. So we can't put capital into the operating, and we don't want to do that, because that's how you get to a place falling apart, which this place was.
And municipalities operate that way.
They
have capital budgets for building, and they have operations for things like that.
Yeah, now, but remember, our capital is not so much building, it's state of good repair. Mm-hmm. So the idea is, like, we have a big expensive house that needs to be looked after, whether it's power cables and track and stations and elevators and escalators and trains and buses, maintenance facilities, all of those things need roofs, they need guys out on the right of way fixing stuff, men and women fixing buses. So all of that stuff has to be funded out of the capital side. Operations is actually running the service every day. So, you know, these things have to kind of get connected in a long-term strategy. And just because the capital money is good for a few more years doesn't mean we don't have a problem, because we can't stop doing heavy maintenance in 3 or 4 years. And otherwise, we're going to run into what happened in LaFont, where we have, you know, water intrusion and smoke in tunnels and things like that. So this system's running pretty well right now. Today, Harold, we're running most trains in the history of Metro running on the system today. We got fully restored to pre-pandemic bus levels. Ridership's going up. We carried over 800,000 people one day in June. You know, a lot of things are going in the right direction. And I think really what we all have to agree on is, let's not regress, right? How do we make sure that all the hard work keeps going forward, not backwards?
Let me go to the phone lines. Kim calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Kim. What's on your mind?
Thanks for having me, Harold.
Sure.
I just want to know, I'm a little disappointed in Metro right now. I've been back in the district since October of 2021. So I frequent at Branch Avenue, which stays unmaintenanced, not clean, and the fare hoppers, gate hoppers, are quite egregious. So coming back into the district back in 2021, I was at Metro Center and Branch, where they adjusted and put in these new gates, but it still does not prevent people from not paying. And I just feel like it's really unfair for those who pay and pay to park.
Yeah, hi, Kim. Totally agree with you. I understand why you're frustrated. I got here last summer. I would agree that the gates that are installed are not optimal or have room for improvement, and that's what we're out doing right now. So as we discussed earlier, we're going to be fixing all those gates in a way that should be better. On the cleaning side, I'll have the team do a spot check in on Branch Ave. I promise you, I'll text that after I leave here. I was down at Branch probably, I don't know, 3 weeks ago. We have dedicated custodians at each station. You know, one of the things that, I talk about cleaning is, when I have someone visit all across the country, they'll say, Randy, this is the cleanest Metro system in the country. And I do think we do have the highest standard. With that said, no matter how often we clean, one of the things I remind people is Metro doesn't actually do the littering. So this is other people in the system, right? So so I appreciate that you see some issues. You can also tweet at us. You can report things. You can talk to the station manager. But I'll make sure the team, we do a double check into Branch Avenue. And Kim, we hope that we'll make your experience a little bit better.
Kim, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Audrey calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I am calling about the Northern Bus Garage in the 16th Street Heights community. We're glad that there will be electric buses. So there are definitely some pros about the bus garage, but there's also a couple of things that are we question, and that's the location of the transit police facility in the Northern Bus Garage. We're not getting houses. What we're getting is a bus garage replacement. what advantage or what benefits do the community get out of having the transit police in our neighborhood? And secondly, you mentioned that there was a Twitter handle for PG County for the Purple Line. Is there any such thing that could be created for the Northern Bus Garage? Thanks so much.
Sure. I think it's Audrey was the name. Thanks for the comment. So, one, I'd always ground everyone. The ultimate community benefit of what we do is the transit system. So that's what we're out there to serve every day and deliver the service. So the Northern Bus Garage is going to be probably the most expensive infrastructure investment on the bus side, the agency's history. Actually, it definitely will be. It's a historic structure that we've been working long before I got here, collaboratively with the neighborhood and the district to make that happen. And that's adding an enormous amount of expense to do it right by the neighborhood. There's obviously, you know, there's a give and take. If that was housing, then we couldn't run the service out of there. And we got to be located in a place where we deliver a lot of service, or we have, quote unquote, what we call deadhead. And deadhead means a lot of expense to move a bus to where people actually would use it. And on the transit police side, we have substations throughout our region to make sure they have great response times to get everywhere. So as the last caller mentioned, they want to actually see more enforcement of certain rules and laws around our system. And for us, we need to be spread out in a way that makes our response times good and make sure we're out there keeping the system safe.
Yeah. Audrey, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. So as you know, the proposal by Councilmember Charles Allen to have, you know, free bus service, that has not succeeded, obviously. But there is, you know, this move for reduced fare. That recent initiative. How does that work exactly?
Yeah, well, listen, one, I appreciate Councilmember Allen and lots of other members of the council, and quite frankly, a lot of people in this region really care about the metro system, and they care about transit being a solution for a lot of societal topics that we talked about earlier. So I commend them for, you know, being innovative. And we all got to work together to get more people on the system, because ultimately that makes everything safer and better air and just better access to everything. On what we've decided to do is implement, and I'm really proud of the team on this, because we implemented what's called Metro Lift, and it actually went live today. And the idea here, it's a low-income fare program. And the idea is to create access, you know, a little bit more affordable access for people that really need it, right? Not everyone in this region needs it, but certain people do. And we want to, you know, do that hand lifting someone up. So if you're if you are on SNAP or eligible for SNAP in Maryland, Virginia, or the district, you can automatically qualify into our system. I went down and checked out we renovated the shop inside of Metro Center, the old store. People were in there today. You can do it online, very easy. Just upload your documents. Literally within minutes of people doing that, they could use the system, and it creates a 50% fare. So whether you're going from Largo to, you know, Dulles Airport and you work out there, or it's a short trip, bus or rail, 50% fare for people that are eligible for the SNAP program. So really, you know, one of the core values that we said as we did a strategic plan this year, safety, and one of the other ones was equity. And I'm really proud of the board. They took a leadership role and said, we want to make these words actionable, not just words on a shelf. And this program is a way to do that. First time ever in our region to really create a program like this.
For people who may have challenges with uploading information, you mentioned, you know, Metro Center. Is there a way that they can do that without dealing with the internet?
The interwebs.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The www. Yeah, www.
Exactly. But you can go to Metro Center up on the mezzanine where the old Metro store was, the ticket store right there, and we're opening a couple other physical locations. We're also going to be going to locations specifically where there might be, you know, could be an affordable housing location or a senior center, where people may, you know, have a cluster of qualified people, and we're going to be working with some people in the region to do that. So if you go onto the Metro website, you'll be able to see where we're located now, other ways you can call, and we'll figure out a way to help you get registered.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, DJ, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, DJ. What's on your mind?
Yes, how you doing? I'm an employee out at Dulles Airport. I love this new facility. Just wanted to ask General Manager Randy Clark. A lot of employees are now purchasing, trying to go green, they're getting the electric vehicles. But when we come to work, I know at night, we are a third rail electrical power system, but we have nowhere to charge the cars. As far as a lot of employees trying to go green, was wondering, is there any solution to the rail yards that could be those charging stations to put in, go green to help cut down on the emission?
Great. DJ, did you say you're an employee?
Yes.
Axel, where are you based out of?
I'm out at the new yard, Dulles.
Oh, Dulles. Excellent. Well, first off, thanks for your service and keep up the great work. I'm really, it's an honor to work with
Jewel Hill is my name, but they call me DJ.
Okay. Well, DJ, I'll take that suggestion back. I know there's some people working on that. I don't know where we are right now. It could be a little bit of crawl, walk, run, where I think at the new garage at New Carrollton we're building, that's going to have that. But I will check into that and figure out ways that we can grow our charging for employees at our areas.
Oh, that's great. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
DJ, thank you so much for your phone call. I just got a comment on social media, quote, they smoke weed on the train. I know this is a public, a public safety issue, a public nuisance issue, recreational marijuana, obviously legal in the district. You said police can't be everywhere. We understand that. But smoking of anything is problematic.
It certainly is. And quite frankly, it's disgusting behavior on a rail, a car, or a bus. We can't be everywhere, and we need people to report that. So, again, we have a CSA app. You can anonymously take a picture, couple quick texts, and it goes right into our control center. We can pull up cameras and then identify people. If you're on a bus or train, you can do that. You can call 911. There's a variety of things. We do believe that's gone down a fair amount in the last few months. I think it's because we have so many officers out there now. I've seen more of that behavior in the last year than I've seen in my entire life. I think it's fair to say society kind of, COVID change the dynamics for a group of people, and we got to get people back into it. All comes out of respect, right? Someone smoking on a rail car is not about disrespecting Metro. They're disrespecting the community at that point. They're not respecting, it could be someone's grandmother that has asthma or something sitting down there. So we're going to do everything we can to try to make sure that doesn't happen. But when it does happen, too, I think, we need to make sure that people that are doing the wrong stuff in society are held accountable a little bit, too, so they don't come back and do that. So societal issues need societal responses, and it's not just Metro. We need people coming together and saying, hey, grow up and don't do stupid stuff.
We've spoken a lot about public safety, obviously. Outside of that most obvious thing, what is the thing that worries you the most about the entire system, whether it's the subway or buses and the like?
Yeah, safety is obviously always going to be the number one thing, right? Safety of the staff every day that work really hard. Work 24/7. That's the first thing I think about again. When I wake up and I go to bed, my wife could attest to that. That is like laser focused on that. And I have a background in safety emergency preparedness on that. You're always worried about, we're the national capital. The what ifs of, the next, a terrorist attack or things of that nature. We prepare for that all the time. We get worried about cyber things and we're prepared about that all the time. We have long term funding challenges. But overall, I generally sleep pretty well every night because I believe in the team we have. I mean, we're going to make mistakes from time to time. We have over 12,000 employees. I challenge anyone that's ever been part of any organization to say that an organization or people don't make mistakes. The key of culture that I'm trying to really grow and foster is just acknowledge you make mistakes. Be transparent when we make a mistake. And I think we've seen that. I'm on social media all the time. Mm-hmm. I'll do like you, Harold. I mean, at WMATA GM is my handle. When we have an issue, we acknowledge it. And then I think it's all right, too, that we celebrate when we're doing good things, because I think that's good that the staff can see all their good work and be proud of what they're doing. And a lot of people That's 12,000 people, which means their relatives are, you know, see what the work they do every way. Oh, by the way, I got to give a shout out to Eileen. She's apparently Harold, one of your ultimate listeners. One of my staff mentioned her grandmother loves you.
I'll send her a check.
There you go. No. but I think, you know, overall, I'm just I really think that we just got to work the system every day. And I'm a customer. So I've had like over 550 trips since I've been the GM in 11 months. Act like your grandmother's waiting for the bus or train. And when you do that every day, the place generally can work much better, because that means you're really caring about the outcome.
The derailment issue on October 12th of 2021.
Yep.
And the only reason I remember that date is because it happened on my father's birthday.
Okay.
And I know that that was a very difficult time for the system. It was very, very trying, and trying to figure out when you're getting all of the trains back on and taking them off. What do you think you learned from, you know, from that situation?
Yeah, well, so we could spend an entire day talking about that topic. So one thing I want to ground everyone is those trains, that 7000 series train, we had a derailment. So, you know, one axle of a train derailed. Those train series ran over 400 million miles, right? Which would be, I think we did some calculation, going around the Beltway like 28,000 times or something, mm-hmm. right? Which, on a daily basis, there's serious safety issues in our motor vehicle situation in America. I think we'll have over 40,000 people die in America in motor vehicle incidents. So transit is enormously much safer than being in a car. Just, it's not even comparable, and statistics prove that out every day. So one, we got to ground everyone that our system is incredibly safe, right? No one got hurt. Was it a technical issue? Yes. Metro probably should have, you know, I think fundamentally did the procedural stuff a little wrong to get back in. We took a deep breath. The team has worked very hard. We're now running all of our 7Ks. We're working very collaboratively with our safety oversight agency, the WMSE, Washington Metropolitan Safety Commission. They've been a great collaborator. We now know what the technical problem is through the NTSB analysis. We have to press our wheels just a little bit more. So lack of better, just the wheels get pushed onto the axle a little bit tighter, and then the axle gets a little bit smaller into the interface of the wheel. You're talking like a thousandth of an inch kind of deal, but enough where that could lead to something. We've not seen any movement since that derailment on any trains. So it was a very anomalous situation, but we now know how to mitigate that long term so it can't happen. And we believe we're going to start, I think, pressing wheels as early as next week on that, and then return the whole fleet to service. The other thing we learned is we're moving forward with an 8K. The next 8000 series trains, our next series trains, sorry. And those are actually going to be built in Maryland. So Hitachi is building a factory in Maryland, Hagerstown, which we're very excited about. And obviously there's some lessons learned from the 7000s that we want to make sure we put into the 8000 series trains as well.
When do you anticipate we see those 8000 series?
Yeah, they're a few years away. So we're just in that kind of wrapping up the design phase right now and go back and forth with them. Obviously, a rail car isn't like going to Best Buy and say, I'll take two of those and one of those.
Yeah,
they are very expensive, very custom built to the environment they are in. Quite frankly, it's as equal as a computer as it is to a mechanical piece of equipment. Very complex. And when you buy a rail car, you need that rail car to last 35 up to 40 years. So we have 2000 series rail cars that are from like early 80s out mm-hmm. on the system and working pretty reliably every day. But our reliability and safety will increase as those old trains can go. Oops, sorry, I hit the mic there.
Oh, that's quite all right.
I was doing some hand talking. but as we get the older trains off, the frequency and reliability and the safety continue to increase. So, yeah, we're really excited about the next generation trains.
And because I also remember one of the things that you were rather emphatic about is, for lack of a better way to describe it, kind of tightening up the inspection of the wheels and the like. In layman's terms, what changed?
Yeah, so basically, for lack of better, the inside of a wheel, you measure from inside to inside. Mm-hmm. And we are now measuring that a lot more often to mitigate and make sure that there isn't, if you will, some type of separation. So we haven't found any anomalies, so the process is working really well. We're automating that with some track wayfinding or track kind of automated system that will do that as well. But when we press this, the wheels like I'm talking about, then we won't have to worry about that really anyway. But we're still going to measure, but it really should solve the problem. It's like a combination of all these things. Last summer, too, we had a problem with, we had some operators that didn't have their safety certifications at the right level, as you were kind of alluding to. All that's been taken care of. We've hired almost 1,300 people at Metro in the last year. I think over 600 rail and bus operators. The largest bus operating class I think we've ever had about 2 months ago. So we're really, it's all about getting great people in the door. We want to build people's careers. We don't want people for jobs. We want people for careers. And we want them to get certified. And we want to actually make their training even better. So we're going to start using a lot of really sophisticated simulators like you would see in aviation or, shuttles and things of that nature. We want to give our staff the most fundamental high-tech training to be the best out there delivering safe service every day.
I only have about 2 minutes left or what have you. Money notwithstanding, and obviously it's hard to, but where do you think the future of Metro is as far as geography? Where would you like to see this system if you had your druthers?
Yeah, well, I'd say two things. One, we got to optimize the system we have. And on the rail side, that means we need to run great service all day, all hours of the day, all days of the week, including the weekend. So Metro used to run very high frequency at rush hour, but not as high good frequency midday, at night, and the weekends. Weekends used to be very low frequency. That's why our ridership on weekends has already recovered full pre-pandemic for the most part, because we are now running all day good service. So that is a big different way to think about the system. Second, I mentioned the bus network redesign. We need to run more bus service in this region. There's no getting around it. Where we have high-frequency routes, say Georgia Ave is a great example of that we're really close to, one of the most important corridors in the whole city, we need to run even more service. But then we have places where there's no Saturday and Sunday service, or there's no service after 7 or 8 o'clock at night. If you want people to be car-free or car-light and get them access to jobs and education and healthcare, you got to run service. So that's kind of where we got to optimize our current footprint. Long term, we have to solve our east-west connectivity issue. So between Roslyn and Stadium Armory, we really don't have the capacity to run more trains than what we're going to run later this year. That's always been called the Roslyn connector issue. It's not about Roslyn and the river. It's the entire east-west capacity where three lines merge together. We're going to be coming out with some information on that in July, but there's been this ongoing study for years about how to kind of solve that, and it's either building a whole new line or moving a piece of a line, but we got to grow as the region grows. This is one of the best regions right in the world, and we got to kind of grow and keep fostering the growth here.
Randy Clark, General Manager for Metro, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming in, and sincerely, good luck to you.
Thanks, Harold. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
Take care.
That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, June 26th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.